so. So we're continuing with the series that we started, where we're going to be looking at the how-to of Christianity. And what I mean by that is there are some things that we pretty much know that we should do. And so I could go into a sermon about how we ought to do this or that, or how we shouldn't do this or that. But there are some things that we know we should do. But sometimes we could walk away wondering, okay, how do I do that? If I were to say, like, worship meaningfully, you would say, okay, great, that's a wonderful thing, but how do I actually do that? How do I do that when the songs that we're singing aren't really the songs that I would have chosen? How do I do that when the preacher isn't my favorite guy to listen to? How do I do that when I have little kids who drive me, who are nonstop, and you're trying to focus and they just can't? And some of these, by the way, I don't have answers for, but wait it out. But what do you do when you're trying to worship and there's distraction? Are you trying to worship and how do you actually get meaningful worship done when you're collected with a body of believers? So that's what we're going to be talking about here this morning in our lesson, maybe, is how to worship meaningfully. I'm hoping I didn't turn it off. There we go, how to get the most out of worship. You might have seen it quickly, but it popped up there. Okay, so how do we get the most out of our worship, or how do we worship meaningfully? I want to read a passage to you before we get too much further into it. It's from Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 15, and it says, "Through him then let us continually offer up our sacrifice of praise to God, that is, the fruit of our lips, which give thanks to his name." A couple of things about that passage I think are really important. One of them is the idea that when it says let us, there's something about community right there. Let us continually offer up a sacrifice of praise to God. Let us then sing praises to his name. There's something about worship, and Brother Tom Langley mentioned this here at the beginning of his Lord's Supper thoughts, but there's a community represented here. There's love represented here, and that's an essential and valuable part of worship, as we'll talk about it. But then also he mentions a sacrifice of praise. One of the most difficult things in our culture and our society to get in our heads as we approach worship is that worship always has been about sacrifice. Worship at its very core is about sacrifice. I remember David, when he's trying to offer a sacrifice to God, he's offered, he's given an animal that he could offer, and he rejects it. He says, no, because I won't offer sacrifice to God that costs me nothing. The idea of worship is rooted in the idea of giving up for God. And sometimes I think we approach worship with perhaps the exact opposite mindset, which is, I'm going to worship to see what I can get from God. I'm going to worship to see what I can get from my brothers and sisters. And some of the things you're wanting, or we're wanting, are very important things. Like, there's nothing wrong about wanting to be encouraged. There's nothing wrong about wanting to learn something interesting and new. Like, there's nothing wrong about wanting to get from it. In fact, I think getting something is going to happen when you worship. But the mindset with which we approach worship is to be one that says, I'm going to give. I'm going to give up. I'm going to even sacrifice. This worship is not about me. It's about something bigger than me and someone bigger than me. And it's about a whole community that's not me. And it's very important, I think, to remember those things, that worship is a sacrifice of praise. It's the fruit of lips, which is the idea that your lips are actually producing something. Your lips are producing and bearing fruit in the things that you say, and in the things that you pray, and in the things that you sing. Like, your lips are involved in offering up praise to God. And that fruit is seen in giving thanks to his name, is the final part of that verse. Worship is a time to say thank you. It's not always a time to ask for more. It's not always a time to try to get more. It's a time to say thank you for what you have. It's a time to say thank you for what God has done. And I think if we can approach worship with that mindset, it can be really beneficial to each of us. But along the way, there are going to be some worship killers, as I'll call them. These are things that if you have these present, or if you have these as part of your mindset or part of your attitude during worship, no matter what else I say, it's going to be really hard for you to worship meaningfully. The first of those is bitterness and resentment. If you're worshiping and the people that you're worshiping with are people with whom you experience bitterness in your relationship, or people that you don't care about, or people who maybe you are angry with, or you are furious with, or people who you wouldn't want to spend eternity with, then all of a sudden the worship that you offer with them, it's going to struggle. I don't see any way that worship doesn't struggle when it is defined by bitterness and resentment. And that bitterness and resentment can come from a lot of things. It might come from personal experiences that you've had with somebody. It might come from seeing somebody who you don't think is living the way that they should be living. That happens, and that's hard to overcome. It could be because the place where you worship doesn't worship the way you would like for them to worship. And every time you go there, you just get a little bit more bitter about it. You wish they would sing different songs, or you wish that they would cover different topics, or you wish that maybe they would do things in a different way. And it's just, the worship was designed before you were born, and you're just stuck in that. And sometimes you can grow bitter just in the way that people worship that you're supposed to be worshiping with. And if that defines your worship, it's going to be very difficult. It's going to be very, very difficult to worship in a meaningful way. So the rest of this lesson, hopefully with some of the things that we'll talk about, some of the very practical how-to things that we'll discuss, if we do those, we might be able to move past a little bit bitterness and resentment. Passive worship. Worship that basically says, I'm here, amuse me. Worship that says, I'm here, I'm going to sit down right here, and I want the worship that you guys all offer to be something that impacts me and is meaningful to me, and you wait. And you wait for worship to change you. That's probably not going to happen. If you sit there and you're waiting for the songs that other people are singing, or the lesson that someone else is bringing, or the prayers that other people are praying to move you or to change you, that might not happen. And if you're of the mindset that says, I have to be the one who's offering the prayer or offering the sermon or offering the singing in order for it to be active, I think it might be time to adopt perhaps a different mindset about what worship is. Worship isn't only something you can engage in when you're the one who's at the front. Worship is something that you can be actively engaged in as you are sitting with your family. Worship is something you can be actively engaged in as you look around at the community around you. Worship is something you can be actively engaged in without being the one who's in the front. Worship is something that you can offer up to God through the words of another's prayer. And that's actually kind of something mystical and beautiful about that. Somebody else is praying, and it's their thoughts that are going into it, and it's their words that are being uttered. And yet you are experiencing God through those words and petitioning God through those words. It's an act of community that's pretty deep and rich when you can consciously think about what is actually happening when someone else is offering a prayer and I'm praying with them. It's a beautiful thing. I think the same thing is true with the singing. I think the same thing is true with giving and with all the things that we do here that kind of define our practices on Sunday mornings. And by the way, this lesson is primarily going to be about worship on Sunday mornings. There are, I think, other times and experiences of worship as well. I'm talking primarily about our communal worship when we gather together on the Lord's Day. There's something sacred about engaging in worship through your brothers and sisters in Christ and with your brothers and sisters in Christ that calls you to an active response in worship rather than just a passive one. But if you go there, come here, and you're just kind of waiting for other people's worship to change you, probably isn't going to happen very well. I would say self-focused worship is the opposite of sacrifice, and it's the opposite of ultimately what worship will be. If our approach to worship is one that says, I'm in it for me. I'm in it for the songs that I like. I'm in it for the worship experience that I think would cultivate an attitude of spirituality or growth. We have to recognize that not everyone grows through the same things. Not everyone is impacted by the same songs. Not everyone is impacted by the same lessons. And when you're a part of a community, you can't have a me-focused attitude in that community. You have to recognize that it's much bigger than you. And so there might be some things that are more applicable to somebody else, or there might be some things that are more meaningful to somebody else, or there might be things that you see no value in, but other people do, and that still matters. If we approach it with a self-focused worship, then I'm pretty sure bitterness and resentment will always, always result. I'm pretty sure if we approach it with a self-focused attitude, it's going to be really hard not to be a passive worshiper. We have to develop a mindset that says, I'm here for you when I gather here because I actually love you. and I want what's best for you, and I see Christ in you, and I want good things for you, even if you're different than me, even if you're of a different generation, even if I don't get how you like that song, I'm here for you, and I love you. Finally, chasing the high, I think, is a worship killer. And what I mean by that is, that's language that sometimes is used when talking about like drug habits, and I'm not comparing it to drug habits in any direct way. But sometimes what happens is the first time somebody gets high, it's so euphoric that they end up chasing that feeling with drugs more and more and more and more. So much so that they can't experience the same level of euphoria in the same level of high with the same amount of drugs. So they end up getting more and more and more, and then maybe you have to take on a different kind of drug, and you end up cultivating this really unhealthy lifestyle because you're chasing a feeling that you had at the beginning. And I would say there are some worship experiences that are transformative and life-changing, and they're like a religious high, and they're a wonderful, beautiful experience, and you won't have them every time. In fact, there will be times that you'll have droughts where it won't really feel like it. But if you constantly are trying to recreate that, if you're constantly chasing the high, then what'll end up happening is you'll end up unsatisfied with everything, because you'll always want more and more and more and more and more. You'll end up constantly cultivating a new worship atmosphere, coming up with a new thing that you can do, and then very quickly that will become unsatisfying. I remember listening to N.T. Wright. He's a well-known New Testament scholar, but he's also like a high church Anglican. He's kind of used to the very traditional styles of worship, but he made a point that I thought was a good one. Basically, what can sometimes happen is in worship, people don't want to accept a style of worship that came along before they were there. They want their style of worship. And so they'll think, well, this will be new and innovative, right? This will be something where we're not just, you know, following the traditional patterns of the past, but we're coming up with something new and something that's organic and wonderful. And do you know how long that stays new and organic and wonderful? Until the next person comes along who didn't invent it, who didn't come up with that. And then all of a sudden, it's just, you're binding on me these traditions from the past. And all of a sudden, worship can become an argument in between generations with every new generation. And I think that happens. I think that happens regularly in worship. I think it happens regularly within churches. And it's like a constant source of bickering or of perhaps bitterness and resentment if I didn't get to cultivate the worship atmosphere. All of that can end up killing your worship experience if you let it. If you let bitterness, if you let me-focused worship, if you let worship become this experience where you're always chasing the most meaningful experience you've ever had and trying to recreate it and cultivate it, once you catch it, it'll become numb to you and you'll have to do more and more. Basically, I think all of these are unhealthy attitudes to approach worship with. Also, I think there are some attitudes that we sometimes think of as worship killers that might not be as unhealthy as we think. They might actually, in some ways, be better for us. Now, again, there are going to be exceptions to everything that I say right now, and if you focus on the exceptions, then maybe you won't agree with me. But I think that what I'll say, there's value in it as well. I think there's value in some of these things that we sometimes consider to be unhealthy. For example, traditional or old-fashioned worship, and I think you could also put into that new age worship, like with newer songs and newer things, worship that you enter into from a different culture. If it's old-fashioned and you're young, so, and I do think, I mean, for the most part, in churches of Christ, this will be our bigger criticism, is our worship is old-fashioned and traditional. I'll say that I don't know that that's all that unhealthy. Entering into a worship experience that is not part of your culture, that's not part of the way you would do things. It's actually kind of a way of giving up a little bit of your culture, giving up a little bit of who you are to enter into a new world when you gather into worship. And it might not be a world that you would have chosen. It might not be a world that you would have created if you were in charge of it. And I think that in and of itself could be valuable if you recognize that worship is a sacrifice of praise. That worship itself is something that you didn't create, and you're only doing it this way because other people matter. Because other people who have come before you, have had voices that made an influence in this world. I think it would be tragic if Christianity always seemed new. If Christianity always seemed like it was the newest thing on the market. Because Christianity's ancient. It's more ancient than anything else I do. There's nothing I do in my life that's as old as my faith. I mean, you go back thousands of years to Jesus, and you go back thousands of years to Abraham before him, and you go back to a God who is eternal. That's as ancient as it gets, okay? Christianity is something that's very, very ancient. And we should be okay with things feeling a little old-fashioned sometimes when we're practicing our Christianity. I don't think that's always negative. You can approach it with a mindset that actually makes it valuable, that actually makes you think, hey, what I'm doing right now has roots that go back beyond me and beyond my parents and beyond my grandparents. And wouldn't it be great if those roots could continue to impact people and make changes on into the future? I think sometimes boring. No one likes to be bored, right? Being bored might not be as bad for you as you think. Being bored might not be as unhealthy as you think. Now, no one thinks, all right, Friday night, I want to go be bored. Like, no one gets excited about the idea of being bored. But again, I will say, there might be benefits to slowing down and being bored for a little while. There might be benefits to doing something that's not the most exciting. I'll say, maybe this makes me sound bad. I hope not. But I've been to prayer meetings before where people will take turns praying and it'll last an hour or something like that. And I hate to tell you, I've never been to one where I haven't been bored. I have been bored at every prayer meeting I've ever been to in my life. And it's not because I don't like prayer. It's because it's hard to sit there for an hour, not moving, with your head bowed reverently. Like, that's not an easy thing to do. But if you ask me, is it valuable? Absolutely, it's valuable. Like, me being bored does not determine the value of something else. There might be things there are probably things you do for entertainment that I would find boring. Phantom of the Opera. I thought that was as boring as it gets, but some people enjoy it. I don't get it. But my boredom does not determine something else's value. And the same is true with our worship. You realize Jesus, the night before he was crucified, was praying in the garden. And he told his disciples to stay up and pray also. And what did they do? They slept. He didn't give them something fun and exciting to do to keep them awake. He let them be overcome by their boredom and sleep. And he called them back to being alert and awake, and they fell asleep again. You remember Paul in Acts chapter 20? He preached until midnight, and Eutychus fell asleep and fell out of the window. That's going to happen. Boredom has always been a problem. It's not a new thing. I mean, it's not like we just came up with boring worship. Worship, I mean, it can be. And so what we could do is we could fight it every step of the way. But why not give in and say, you know what? Once a week, there's a time where I'm going to focus on something that's important and I might even be bored while I do it. But that in and of itself is a change from my daily life, and it can be valuable. I think number three, irrelevant worship. So again, when you're part of a community, I'll tell you one of my struggles as a preacher. Coming up with lessons that need to be heard, that everyone of every demographic, of every age range, of every generation, all that, are equally benefited by. If I preach a lesson on social media, I think that's a needed lesson, right? In fact, we're going to do a how-to lesson where we talk about social media in a couple of weeks. But I think that's very important because it's a huge part of a lot of people's lives. But there are some people, it's not going to be relevant to their lives at all because they're not on social media. There are going to be some lessons I give on being a husband or a wife. And you can think, well, I'm not married. And you know what? There probably needs to be more said for people who aren't married or for people who are widowed or for people who don't have kids in the house anymore. Sometimes the church can focus so much on family that we forget that there's a lot of people in other stages of life who are valuable, equal members of the kingdom. And so I think sometimes you say, okay, well, then I'll do a lesson on how to serve God without, you know, in singleness, or how to serve God in this way. And then the people with families are like, well, that's irrelevant to me. And here's the point. It's very difficult to always be relevant to everybody. But you know what? It's not always a bad thing. It's not necessarily a bad thing to be reminded that there are people other than you in the church. and that there are lessons that other people need to hear, or there are songs that are meaningful to other people. I think it would be tragic if Christianity became the evening news. If Christianity, this 2,000-year-old religion based on the death and resurrection of Jesus, changed as much as my Twitter feed does. If it was always just chasing the newest topic. Do you want there to be a Christian engagement with the world? Certainly. Yes, absolutely. But at the same time, there should be things that are a part of our worship that are always a part of our worship, no matter how much the world changes, no matter whether things are ebbing and we're flowing or things are high or low or whatever, there should be things that you could come here and you can always, always count on. And if you're always chasing the newest relevant topic, perhaps you can forget that there's something ancient and sturdy and solid about Christianity. We don't want it always changing and blowing around by every wind. As a matter of fact, that's some of the language that the apostles use. It's like a ship on a sea. You don't want your faith to just always be changing. You don't want to be blown around by the wind. There are some things you want to always, always be able to count on. Even if it seems irrelevant at the moment, it probably isn't. Which is why repetitive worship maybe isn't the most unhealthy thing in the world. Maybe worship that seems like it's the same every time could actually slowly, in a boring way, be transforming you. There are repetitions that I think are good repetitions. And sometimes we get nervous about repetitions because Jesus does warn about vain repetitions. But again, those are vain repetitions. If you're repeating things merely for the sake of looking spiritual or holy or something like that, that's a problem. But is there a problem with offering the same prayer to start your day every morning? I don't think so. As a matter of fact, the prayer that I offer every night before bed, a lot of parts of it are pretty much the same every night. When I pray for my kids and I pray for our marriage and I pray for this church, and then usually at the end I'll add some current events and things like that. But it's like the first three parts of my nightly prayer with Lauren are pretty much the same every night. Why? Because I've thought about them, and that's kind of what I want to pray for. And I don't want to just change it up all the time just for the sake of changing it up. I don't know what else I would say that's better. And so I do often pray for the same things, and I think there could be value in repetition. Last week we talked about Bible study, and we talked about reading the same book of the Bible over and over again. You could say, well, I want to move on to a new book. Maybe you could, but I think there's value in hearing the same words over and over, even if it's repetitive. Even if it can get boring. I think sometimes offering the same prayers over and over again, as long as you're not doing it in a vain or mindless way, it could be valuable to you. It could slowly transform you. So, getting that out of the way, let's just end this lesson by talking about what are some things I can do to make worship more meaningful. Prepare for worship. Sunday's coming. It's always coming. Be ready for it. What I mean is maybe look at the bulletin and see what some of what we'll be focusing on. Maybe offer prayers before you get to worship about the things you'll be worshiping about. Maybe try to, on Saturday night, get things ready so that Sunday morning isn't just chaos trying to get to church on time. Maybe on your way to church, sing a song with your family in the car. But do things to try to prepare your mind because worship is about to begin and you want to make sure that things are in order. Another way you could prepare for worship is if there is somebody that you have bitterness and resentment towards. There is somebody who maybe there's a grudge or a conflict. Maybe talk to that person before you go worship with them. I think there's precedent for that in Matthew chapter 5 when Jesus is talking about bringing your gift to the altar. Go leave it there for a minute and go talk to the person. Like, prepare for your offering by making sure your relationships are right. I think there's a lot we can do to prepare for worship and making sure that our attitudes are right, our relationships are right, and our mindset is that which is conducive to glorifying God. Live your worship. What I mean is, in Amos chapter 5, God tells the Israelites he hates their worship, and he hates their assemblies, and he hates their solemn gatherings, and he hates their new moons, he hates their festivals, he hates their sacrifices. And you say, why does God hate everyone's worship? He says, because your lives are inconsistent. You know what I'd rather see than you offering up some bull on an altar and gathering together for a solemn assembly? I'd rather see justice flow like waters and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. That's what I'd rather see. If your worship is inconsistent with the way that you live your life, you probably won't have meaningful worship. If you are greedy or angry or bitter, or you talk bad about people, or you complain about the church, or you live your life in such a way that politics is the number one most important thing in your life, or your job is the number one most important thing in your life, and then all of a sudden you go to worship, worship might not seem all that beneficial to you. It'll be more helpful if you live a life consistent with the call of Jesus, and then you go to worship that Jesus. I think that'll be meaningful. Focus on what you say. So when we worship, we sing a lot of songs. We offer prayers. Try to focus on the words that you're saying. You'd be amazed how many promises you make to God during worship. During some of these songs, we'll often say things like, my Jesus, I love thee. I know thou art mine. For thee, all the follies of sin I resign. Really? That's quite a thing to promise God. You just did it. So think about that. That should mean something. If you're making an oath to God, if you're promising God something, take that seriously. Think about the words that you're saying. Think about the words that we sing. You might not be the one who wrote them. You might not be the one who chose them. But if you're singing them, you're talking. You're talking to a community here. You're talking to God. Think about the words that you say. Just like in every conversation that you have, you should probably consider your words. Do it in worship as well. I think that'll be transformative. Look around you. I've talked quite a bit about the fact that we're in community. And one of the things that we often focus on is worship is like this vertical relationship with us and God, where we offer up our worship and praise to God. And that's true. But worship also has in mind the people around us. Let us continually offer up a sacrifice of praise. It's something we're doing together. And to me, it is encouraging. In a world that often is bleak and dark and sometimes can feel hopeless, to see a room full of people who do not have to be here, but they are here because we are united in purpose and the love of God. Look around and receive encouragement from the people around you and say, I might not like this song, but I'll sing it for you. Say, I might not like this lesson, but not in a condescending way, but I'm glad you're hearing it, because that happens too sometimes. I'm not talking that. I'm talking about the fact that there are times when there might be things that you see as beneficial for the community as a whole or for others. Look at your community. Look at your family and love them. Be easygoing. I'm going to tell you, worship's never going to go the way you want it to. Sometimes there's noisy babies. Sometimes people make mistakes. Be fine with people making mistakes. Be glad that there are noisy babies there. Be glad that things, if there are disruptions to your worship, laugh it off and keep worshiping. You don't have to be uptight about worship. You don't have to have everything go perfectly for your worship to go perfectly. Be easygoing. Be relational in your worship. One thing that I think could be helpful is, think of it like Thanksgiving. Okay, so what I mean by that is sometimes at Thanksgiving you go to grandma's house, and grandma's house feels a little bit like you're stepping back in time. Grandma's house feels it's like, it's not how I would decorate. It's not my culture. Grandma does things differently, but I love grandma, so I'm gonna go to grandma's house. And you know what? There's gonna be food here, and a lot of the food's gonna be pretty good. Some of the food I'm not gonna like very much, but you know what? I still love grandma. And you know what? Sometimes the turkey's a little bit dry. What happens when the turkey's dry? Do you say, that's it, I'm out of here, I'm finding a new family because I don't like that turkey? Most people don't do that on Thanksgiving. People might do that with church if they don't like something there. But on Thanksgiving, most people realize, you know what? I would have preferred the turkey different. I would have preferred more ham. I would have preferred the stuffing to have. Like, you might have preferences, but they're your family. And family matters. And you know what? Sometimes you can even joke about things that aren't great. Sometimes you can even, like, that's just something that you guys are aware of. And you think, yeah, that could be better. But we still love each other. And we don't leave because things aren't the way that I wanted them to. Treat worship like a family meal. Like Thanksgiving. And recognize that family's bigger than the little things that pop up from time to time that you wish were different. Learn more about it. Learn more about the Bible. Learn more about the Christian faith. Learn more theology. Learn more about the songs. So one of the things that I love that Herb Bird did on, I guess it was Wednesday, Sunday night last week, was he did a spotlight on one of the songs to talk about some of the history behind them. And you know what that does? It kind of makes the song a little more interesting. It makes the phrases you sing, you're like, oh, I can connect that to a context. And it makes it a little bit better. They have done studies, and I'm not advocating go out and drink wine right now, but just listen to the study. They have done studies on wine tasting, where People who know nothing about wine don't enjoy the wine tasting nearly as much as people who, you give them a little background, you tell them where it's from, you tell them maybe something to try to taste for, you tell them about the aging process, you tell them about the vineyard, you tell them about the family who cultivated it, and like all of a sudden when they taste it, they have things they're thinking about, things they're looking for, and they go, ooh, that comes exciting. The same is true with art. If you show someone a picture, and you show them another picture, and you show them another picture, and they know nothing about the pictures or the artists or anything to look for, it's like, okay, cool. Cool. But if you get the art and you tell people about the artist and you tell them some of the style and you tell them look for some of the brush strokes to look for and you tell people to look for one of the things that they're famous for is this, and all of a sudden they're looking at it and they can see the details and they can make connections, it becomes more meaningful. It's true with pretty much everything. The more you know about something, the more you appreciate that thing. The more that you can enjoy a hobby, like the more you can enjoy football if you know something about football. The more you can enjoy worship if you're interested in what's going to be said, and the way you can cultivate interest is learning more about things. So learn more about it. Do it for a lifetime. And now that's not an easy thing to go do right now, but if you spend a lifetime gathering with Christians for worship, it'll all of a sudden get really, really hard to stop doing that. If you cultivate a transformational hobby that is good for you, where you see people, and then all of a sudden you just stop doing it, it'll feel like an essential part of you has been ripped from you. Spend a lifetime committing yourself to worship, and over time it will become more and more valuable to you. Try to make it meaningful for others. When you worship, don't just ask, how can it be meaningful to me? Do things to make it meaningful. You know, there are people who will come here to this building who probably won't see anyone else until next Sunday. There are people who will come here to this building who probably haven't been hugged since the last time they were at this building. There are people who will come here to this building, and this is their community. This is their family. This is where they get a chance to sing, and this is where they get a chance to learn, and this is where they get a chance to pray with a group of people who then love them. Think about those people, reach out to those people, try to worship for those people. Worship to make it meaningful for them. Make this a meaningful experience for the people who are part of your family. Remember the cross. Jesus didn't go to the cross because he was trying to do something enjoyable. The cross is itself a picture of sacrifice. The cross, in a very real way, could be a picture of our worship. We're going to worship, and we're doing it with others in mind. We might even make sacrifices for what I would want for the sake of other people. And as you do so, you remember, not only am I to imitate the cross, but what the cross means for me. Jesus loved me so much that he would give his all for me. That's something to thank God for. That's something to sing about. That's something to worship God for. Also remember the resurrection, that Jesus is alive and well, and you can worship him now. Jesus is alive and well, and in a mysterious way is present with us, and you can worship with him today. That's a beautiful thought. That's a powerful thought, and I think that's a thought that'll make your worship all the more meaningful if you worship as though the one you're worshiping really is present. If you think of God as some transcendent being off above the clouds somewhere, far and away, who you'll never see, then yeah, worship can become dull. But if you think of God as filling the pew next to you, if you think of Jesus as alive and well, then your worship all of a sudden becomes that much closer to the object of your worship, and that can change you. So here's the challenge as we draw our lesson to a close. Commit yourself to regular communal worship and trust the long, slow, sometimes boring process, essential process of growth. I think you'll grow closer to God through worship. I think that's one of the reasons that the church has done it for 2,000 years. That's why it defines our Sunday for 2,000 years, because it's a pretty good idea. So let's go to it. Let's commit ourselves to it. Let's love each other through it, even if it's not what we want it to always be. Trust the process and grow closer to God. And if there's anyone here who wants to become a part of the church here, if you want to become a part of the kingdom of God, if you want to name Jesus as Lord of your life, have your sins washed away in baptism, live for him from this point forward, we pray that you would let that be known. Come sit on the front row or talk to some of our elders in the library in the back. But we pray that you would let that be known while we stand and as we sing.